Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Short Term Show. Today, we have Ziana McIntyre, a very experienced short-term rental investor. It might be maybe the most experienced that we've had on so far. She has been hosting and owning short-term rentals for 9 years. And today, she's going to tell us a little bit about how she went from a college student to financially independent in 2 years' time. How's it going, Ziana?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, just kind of like a general background? Let's hear a summary of how you went from a broke college student to financially independent within 2 years.
Yeah. So I live in Boulder, Colorado, which is a college town. And I had heard about Airbnb from a friend of mine living in New York City. He had just gotten laid off and he was like, you know what? I heard about this Airbnb thing. I think I'm going to try it and go travel. And so after a little while, he was doing so well with it. He kept saying, hey, you've got to do this. You've got to do this. And at the time I was in massage school. I was in college there and was like, no, I don't have time for this. I'm doing my own things. I'm going to do massage and that's going to be my hustle. And then after a year, he told me that he made $50,000 off an apartment that he didn't own. And I was like, whoa, okay, I'm listening. At the time, $50,000 was a full salary. That was like saying you made $100,000 now. And so I just didn't know that that could be possible from a side hustle. And so for me, that really got me thinking. And I borrowed some money from my father and just started running with this short-term rental business. When I first started it, I just had a property I was renting that was a two-bedroom. I had it fully furnished myself. And the timing was really good because I had a roommate who was moving out. And so I kind of figured, well, I could rent this out on Airbnb. If it doesn't work out, I will just get another roommate. So no lose there. And it turned out to be so good that I was renting out her old room, then renting out my room and staying with friends. And then I eventually got a few other apartments. So it took me a couple of years before I could actually afford to buy something, but I was definitely onto something. And I've grown that now to owning 11 units. At one point, I was managing in 4 different countries, and I've managed probably 60-something Airbnbs in my time. So I definitely have a lot of experience if you got some questions for me. But I was thinking earlier, like, Avery knows all the answers to these questions. So what is she even going to ask me? Yeah.
Because your journey has been different from my journey. And that's what everybody wants to hear, because everybody's journey is going to be a little bit different in terms of real estate investing and where they start and where they finish and what their journey is. So we want to hear yours too.
Yeah.
Cool. So tell me about your first deal. You said you borrowed some money from your dad. So tell us about how that deal was structured, what it looked like, where it was, all that.
Yeah. So, you know, my first forte was just in the place that I was renting and living in at first. But when I was borrowing money from my dad, I thought, okay, you know, this is doing so well. What if I got another unit? And so I struck out to just rent another unit, which now they call Airbnb arbitrage or master leasing. But at the time, nobody really knew what Airbnb was. And so, yeah, that was kind of just a new exciting thing to try. So I borrowed $4,000 and that paid for $1,200 rent and deposit and then some furniture. And I really just strapped it together with garage sales and Craigslist and anything like that to kind of make it work. And I was off to the races. That place was really successful for a little while, but I did make a mistake with that one. And the mistake was that it was a small 9-unit building and the same landlord owned the whole building. And so a neighbor ended up ratting me out and I got kicked out of that space. But the turning point there was that I didn't get evicted. The landlord was like, this is a really creative idea. I love that you're doing it. You just can't do it here. He gave me my deposit back. So I was like, you know what? Maybe this is an okay thing. And I'll just come back and keep going. So I did find other places, and it kept it being a great business.
That's awesome. I think that a lot of people that arbitrage have that fear of being kicked out. And it's kind of not if, it's when. In some markets, not in all markets, some are more friendly than others towards that. So is that first one, you might have said this and I missed it, was that in Boulder?
Yeah, I've been doing most of them in Boulder, at least that was my start.
Tell me about managing short-term rentals in other countries.
Yeah. So, you know, I've actually found them to be not that great. I've done a lot in other states and that seems to be really great, but I've managed in Greece, Spain. I was in Cape Town, South Africa. I think those are the only ones. But what I've found, at least in Europe, is that they have really strict times of year that people are off. So here in the US, you can take a trip anytime. You can take your kids out of school. Places like Germany, it's actually illegal to take your kids out of school when it's not just a full school holiday. So people are basically traveling during Easter, and then they're traveling maybe their summer holiday. And so those great times are booked. And then other than that, it's not super booked. So I just found that it was really kind of feast or famine, and it just didn't end up being a very good return. So yeah, I prefer to stick to the US. And actually, when I talk to people that want to invest out of the country, I'm always a little bit wary of it.
I didn't realize that. So whereas here, you can just take your kid out of school to go on vacation basically anytime. There, it's illegal to do that.
Yeah, just education is such an important thing.
Yeah, it definitely is important. I do remember getting, my mom got something in the mail one time that said I'd taken the max amount of days off school. I think I was a senior, but I had great, I mean, my grades were awesome and I had a scholarship to go to school in Texas. So they were just like, we have to send this, but it's fine. So that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I could totally understand why that is a rule, but I also would have a really difficult time adhering to that.
Yeah, totally.
So how did you get hooked up with managing places in Europe? And even, I mean, South Africa, that's a very specific place. It's not like, you know, two or three different countries in Europe. That's an entirely different continent. How did that happen?
It happened from podcasts. So I got on the Bigger Pockets podcast like you have in 2017. And so lots of investors were hearing about me. And then I did a lot more podcasts. And so people would end up reaching out to me just because they heard about it and they could be anywhere. So then I just thought, well, I was at the time already invested in St. Louis personally. And so I was managing afar. And I just thought, well, if I'm managing two states over, what is the difference of managing, you know, couple countries over, right? It is a little different with the time difference. And then maybe just culturally, there's some things that are a little bit harder, but it is pretty similar once you learn how to manage from afar.
That is a really good knowledge nugget that I want to pay, like, shine a light on really quick. The difference between managing two states over and two countries over is not that different. And I think that's such an important thing for people to understand, because not everybody can live in the best area to invest in short-term rentals. So you're most likely going to have to invest states away. So the parallel that I want to draw there is investing in something several states away is exactly the same as investing in something in your backyard. If something breaks, you're going to make a phone call regardless. Like, I'm not a plumber, so if a toilet breaks in my house, I'm calling somebody to fix that toilet. I'm not fixing it myself. So a lot of people have a limiting belief that, oh, I have to be near the property so that I can go do maintenance things and fix things when they break. But you're probably not going to be the one to do that, even if you do live next door to it. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think there's this weird, I don't know, there's sometimes just weird real estate rules, but I know a lot of people say like, oh, well, I'm going to try to have something within a 4 hours drive. And I'm like, 4 hours? Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to go over there if there's ever a problem? Like, I own a property 90 minutes from here. And like, honestly, if it's more than 40 minutes, I'm not going there. Like, I go see that house every year and a half, just like I see the St. Louis properties. So it's just far enough away that it's not going to happen. So yeah, you have to just get comfortable And it's not always comfortable because sometimes you feel helpless when there's an emergency, but you just have to get your really good team in line. And it can be done. Anybody can learn that.
Yeah. And especially nowadays when even working a corporate job remotely is so normal, it's the resources are there. You just have to be comfortable with making the phone calls. And if you don't get the result you want with the first phone call, you call someone else. And just having the confidence in yourself to be able to get things done from a distance is definitely key there.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Cool. So where are all of your properties in your portfolio currently? You mentioned St. Louis. You have one right around somewhere around Boulder. What do the rest of them look like?
Yeah, I have two in Boulder that are month to month, short term. I mean, okay, medium term is what I call that generally. I've got three in St. Louis. I used to have four there. I have like five units in Florida, but they are longer term. And then I have one in Colorado Springs. So it's about an hour and a half from Boulder.
Okay. And how many of those are that medium term that you talked about versus like a true short-term rental?
Yeah. You know, since COVID, I realized that I really like medium-term rentals. So I do see how short-term rentals can make more money. But they're so easy when they're medium-term because I find that the guest has that first 3 days thing where they're going to ask you a lot of questions. They're going to learn that house in the first 3 days. And then after that, they're pretty good. And so if you have short-term rentals where it's 3 or 4 days, then each guest is kind of going through that period. And it's not that often that you don't hear from them. But in a medium-term rental that can often be 3 months, it's like you get them in there, they know how to do it. They're doing the trash, which if you're a short-term rental operator, you know that's a pain in the butt. And so it's been really great. So at this point, I operate probably one or two short-term, but then I manage a few still. So I probably have like 10 short-terms that I'm doing right now, which is the smallest ever, because now I'm a real estate agent like you at eXp. Yes. So I've just been running around doing a little bit more of that, which is fun and new.
Being a real estate agent is fun. It can be, I mean, there are many days where I want to absolutely rip my hair out, but I don't want to say how often, I don't know how often, but I got a text yesterday from a client who's bought two or three things with me, and she's like been a cool client, like pretty low maintenance. And she sent me a text and she was like, "Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to have you in my life. I'm making X amount of money on top of our salary now, and we're able to do this and this and this for our children. And we're just really grateful to have you." And I was like, okay, yes, this is why I do this. I remember now.
So, yeah.
It really is rewarding to help people build that wealth. Cause a lot of people, they have it in them. They just need a little help figuring out how to do that. So, being a real estate agent, I know a lot of people put us in the same bucket as like used car salesmen and bookies and things like that, but it can be really, really rewarding. And I'm very grateful to be one, as I'm sure you are as well.
Yeah, I found that I loved that it allows me to be a mentor long term, because I do a little bit of consulting with people, usually in the Airbnb space. And you know, consulting is a high cost thing. So somebody might come and see me for an hour and talk about their business structure, and then they'd have a lot of juice to go out and start their business. And then I may not hear from them for a long time. But with real estate, especially working with investors, you get this thing where you're like strategizing, and it's like, okay, we're buying this house this year. And then in 6 months, let me check in with you and let's come up with a plan. So I do really love that. And what I love that you do that's pretty unique is there's not a lot of people that are offering purely short-term rentals as agents. And short-term rentals are really the cash cows in the business. And so it is really great to be able to offer something that can change lives with very few properties. The only reason I've gone to medium term is because I make enough cash flow in my portfolio already that I could make that choice to say, okay, this is going to make a little less money, but I want the ease now. And so that's kind of a choice that you change in your investing, you know, strategy over time if you have that privilege, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people think that we're anti-property manager, anti-short-term property manager. I love my long-term managers on my units, but we're not technically anti-short-term rental manager. We are just pro cash flow. And for most people, most of our clients are people who are buying these as turbochargers in their portfolio to boost that income so that they can bootstrap and scale and buy as many properties as they can in a short period of time, or in as short a period of time as possible, so that they can become financially independent as quickly as possible. And, you know, after a point, once you get to a certain level of cash flow, it might make more sense for you to get a property manager that, you know, charges a reasonable amount, because you're not necessarily in it to maximize every single dollar anymore. And it becomes a little bit easier. So that's actually something that I wanted to clarify too, that as time goes on and you build a portfolio to a certain size, you may not want to manage your short-term rentals anymore. And then that might be a time to start looking for a manager.
Yeah. And short-term rental managers can be 25 to 40%. So a lot of times there's not that much money in the deal. You know, maybe your short-term rental makes 20% and a long-term rental would have only made 7 or 5. So it's like, okay, great. You're getting that. But then if you give that to the manager, then you're not really getting that. And so I've definitely seen that a lot with people where I don't think they realize that, or they don't run the numbers ahead. And I'm seeing it, managing it for them and doing the most that we can do and just saying like, hey, I don't know if this is your best strategy, but I know some people are okay with just breaking even and then hoping for appreciation. It's not the way I invest, but you know, everybody has their own process.
I agree. I'm definitely not an invest based on appreciation person myself. It's all about the cash flow for me. And if it appreciates, that's amazing. I love it, but that's not purely the reason to invest over here.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Cool. Let's jump back into your portfolio. So you scaled from 1 to, or you have 11 now, but you scaled from 1 to a certain amount to create financial independence within 2 years. So what did that look like? Were you getting conventional financing on these, commercial, borrowing money, partnerships? What's your financing strategy?
Yeah. So one thing I love about short-term rental, especially combined with frugality, if you're like a FIRE person, which is the FIRE movement, is financial independence, retire early. So I kind of came from that side and then added real estate on top. So I was already a college student, already able to live really frugal. And then I just didn't need that much. So I was able to do it with one rental and one place that I bought. And maybe even when I had just two rentals, which were 2 one-bedrooms, I was able to do it. So what I love about short-term rental is I've talked to people where they have one house and they decided, like, for example, I have a friend that was doing it in Amsterdam, and Amsterdam's changed their laws. But early back in the day, he was able to say, hey, you know, what if I go live in Thailand and Bali and travel and do everything that I love, not work, and I can live off of my one property in Amsterdam renting on Airbnb. And with long-term rentals, to do that, to cover an income, getting $3,000 to $5,000 a month, you have to have like 20, 30 properties, right? So it could take people a really long time to get to that place. So I love that about Airbnb. And so for me, it was really this point where I had one one-bedroom rental, one nearby that was another one-bedroom that I ended up buying. And for me, for financing, I've done it every way you can do it. I don't think it was until I owned my 8th property that I got a mortgage. So now I think I'm working on my 3rd mortgage or something like that. But I have done like a private loan, asking somebody for that, just an investor that I knew. I did a private HELOC. So I went to that same investor and did that for another property. I've done a bunch of partnerships where I have a friend bring the cash and then I'm the investor that manages. I've also done where other people get the mortgage because they have a super easy W-2 job. And I just, for a long time, didn't feel like I had the ability to get a mortgage as somebody who worked for themselves and did this Airbnb thing that forever was not recognized as income. So yeah, it took me a really long time, but here I am getting my mortgages like a big girl.
Yeah, as we were talking about a problem that I'm having with one offline with a low appraisal, I'm sick of, so I love conventional financing because it's easy. You can do the 10% down vacation home loan if you meet the right requirements. Talk to your lender about that. This, I'm not telling you what to do there, but I'm sick of the appraisals and the the commercial banks now are so much easier for me personally to deal with. So that is my route from this point forward as of today, because I'm in a bad mood about it. But
Yeah. You know, and I think the partner thing is so easy. The like, oh, I'm just going to find somebody who qualifies for mortgage and it's great. What sucks about that is you're married to that person. And I've done it maybe 4 or 5 times and it's worked out great except for one. But the thing that is annoying is that they get so used to being a silent partner and passive that when you need to call on them for help, they don't want to help. And I don't know. It's a long time that you're going to be owning with these people. So that's why sometimes I think people prefer to do something where they're borrowing money and then they get to give it back and they're not stuck with a partner.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. We've done partnership deals before and it worked out really well. We've only done it once with one partner and it worked out fantastic. But I can see how with a different person and a different personality type, it might not have worked out as well. But the sweat equity slash money partner model can be a really good model for short-term rentals, because if you have one person who's really easily financeable and they're fine with getting the loan in their name and then you're the managing partner, that's a really easy way to split a deal. Whereas with long-terms, it's a little bit more difficult because it's a little more or significantly more hands-off than the management of short-terms.
Yeah. Yeah. And a long-term rental just doesn't make the money fast enough. So it's almost kind of like not worth it. It depends.
Yeah. You really just have to have a lot more long-terms to make the same amount of money as a short-term.
Yeah.
So let's get into, once you own these properties, how are you furnishing them? Because a lot of people, when properties aren't coming furnished, because the markets that I work in, most of them are coming furnished, but that's not the case in a lot of the country. So what do you do to furnish a property?
Yeah. So, I mean, the only ones I furnish are the ones that I've bought. I think I've helped maybe 2 owners furnish, but generally if I'm managing a property for someone else, it comes furnished. My whole thing is that when I was furnishing my properties, I would like arrive maybe the day before and I would hit the ground running, and I tried to do everything kind of on a budget. And so I personally love doing thrift shops, consignment stores, going to Facebook Marketplace stuff, Craigslist. So I kind of did it that way. But I also have heard from companies where it's just super easy if you have your outfitters that you always use. And maybe you have a list on Amazon and you just could do that list every single time and then go to IKEA or whatever. I just figured that if you have more than one piece from IKEA, it just shouts IKEA. So I don't like that. Places to look, yeah, more unique. So I find it fun. But what I would say is what you save in money, you spend in time doing it that way. And so sometimes it does make sense to just try to go to a few places and get a bunch of things new and maybe have like a building party where you're assembling everything.
Yeah, I actually had a guy named Jeff Alulian on one of my episodes that I'm not sure exactly the order it's going to come out yet. Might come out before you, might come out after you. But he has this really cool company called Host GPO. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I hadn't either. One of my clients introduced him to me. And it's a group purchasing organization. So it's basically like the hotel industry has group purchasing organizations. And I'm not going to do as good of a job explaining what it is as he did. So just listen to the episode and listen to it in his words. But basically, it's for hosts to come together. And because they're buying through this group purchasing organization, there are a lot of really great discounts with a lot of different, whether it's furniture companies or sheets and textile companies, or even down to like the toiletries that you get, there's some really, really good discounts. Like they have West Elm, Home Depot discounts, lots of really cool stuff. So I think I'm going to try that on my next one. And they come, whichever vendor you end up purchasing through with them, they come and put it together for you wherever your place is. So you don't have to have that putting together party, because honestly, that made my blood pressure go up a little bit when you said that, because that sounds like the worst time. I can't put things together. It makes me crazy. It stresses me out. So I want somebody to come put my stuff together.
Yeah, that's why I buy it on Craigslist. No assembly required. It's like somebody else did that already. Yeah. I know. One thing I do like about Facebook and Craigslist is, like, for me, when I was buying in St. Louis, I literally had gone there for a wedding and had like 2 days in town, went home and decided to buy. And I was, you know, studying everything online and driving down the streets with the Google Maps, but I didn't know anything about different parts of town. So Craigslist would take me places because I had to go pick up a random couch here and some lamps over there. So I really got to learn the area. So I thought that that was really a cool, valuable part. But I think I'll also look at this host GPO because, yeah, you always need sheets and it's good if you can get discounts.
Yeah, yeah. And they have this cool stuff. Like, so for me, ordering sheets is kind of a pain because in some of our places we have queen size bed and some we have king. And so our cleaner wants us to have a different color sheet for the queen and king so she knows. So these, I think Standard Textiles is the place that it comes from. They have just a ring of thread around the inside that is a different color based on what size it is. So your cleaner isn't having to like rifle through and find the tag to see what size it is. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so genius. Like, I'm so excited about sheets right now. It's ridiculous.
And so many sheets are not labeled. It's so weird. I'm like, okay, this is basic. Like, we would all put a queen label, right? No. Many are not labeled. So it's actually really hard if you don't do the different colors. Yeah, that's genius. One thing I will say is that a lot of the places that come furnished, the furniture is terrible. It is just like old, old people furniture. Mm-hmm. So I know that people sometimes just start with that and get going, but I am really a proponent of having like a stylish place, really good photos. And I think that that will make back the investment. So yeah, I think it's great to have resources like this host GPO. The only other thing I'll plug is that like places like Ross, Marshall's, Home Goods, if you're in the US, those are really affordable and you can get a lot of cool stuff there. So I like going to those places and just getting all the finishing touches.
Yeah, TJ Maxx is my sheet place. Mm-hmm. So how did you land on St. Louis? Is that just, you just went and visited and it was cool, so you bought something, or how'd that go?
Yeah. You know, that was totally random. I went out there for a wedding, a friend's wedding, and we were only in the city one day. And then we went out to like a park in the countryside. And I was just talking to people at the wedding. And at that point I'd been doing Airbnb for 2 or 3 years. So when they said like, what do you do? That was what I did. And a bunch of people said, oh, you know, we have friends that are doing it and they're doing it really well. We've been thinking about doing it here. And of course I got to the point of asking them a little bit about like what the cost of housing was. And I knew my friend had been living there because it was so affordable. And so I think her rent was like $400 a month. Meanwhile, in Boulder, I'm paying like $1,200 for a one bedroom. And so I was talking to some people and they were saying, oh yeah, we have a 3-bedroom house, you know, garage, $300 a month. And so my little brain is going like, okay, that's like 3 nights, you know, like I'm pretty sure I can book it for $100 a night. So I just kind of thought, shoot, if I can book 15 nights a month, that this is going to be a no-brainer. This is going to like kill. So I did a bunch of research and I ended up buying there like a month later. I just showed up sight unseen with my house and made it work.
What was the purchase price on that?
That house was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, front and backyard, 2-car garage, and that was $72,000. And I recently sold it for like $135,000. But yeah, it's crazy over there.
Yeah, the vacation markets, like the place I'm under contract on is a 3-bedroom and it's in the 500s. So yeah, man, gone are the days of being able to get something nice for that price.
Totally. I mean, they still sell for that price there. But the problem with St. Louis now is that, of course, I was doing everything before regulations because I've been doing this so long that now you have to do month to month in certain parts. And so, or they'll charge you these like exorbitant short-term rental tax fees, and then it doesn't really make sense to do short-term. So yeah, I found that medium-term is my sweet spot there, and you just have to adapt with the times.
Yeah, I've had a few guests and friends who are doing short-terms in metro markets that are kind of having some regulations issues. have really great success with the medium-term corporate furnished rental market.
Yeah. I would totally say it's like the gray area. Like people have focused so much on saying like, oh, under 28 days is bad. That there are very few places that have like that 6 month minimum. Sometimes I hear about that, but generally it's just 30 days. And so, yeah, I mean, you can make crazy money with them still. And especially now, it was interesting because when COVID happened, I was thinking, well, people are not traveling for business anymore. So we're not going to be getting these people coming in for professors or here we have atmospheric research or Ball Aerospace, stuff like that, that people were traveling for. But now there's so many people that are saying like, hey, I'm going to be location independent. I don't have to go into my office. So I'm going to do a month in Boulder and then a month in Austin and bop around. So people are paying crazy money to be in a furnished rental, especially if they've come from New York or California, where they're used to paying, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 for a one bedroom. So it's been a really good time to be doing month to month.
Awesome. And it's good for people to understand who maybe are interested in getting into short-term rental investing, but are scared that there are options. It's not just you can short-term this property or you can long-term this property. There's a number of different ways that you can monetize it, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that you need to have like a plan B, C, and D, right? So, and it should work in a few of them. If it only works as a short-term, that's a red flag, I think.
Yeah, in metro markets for sure. So you've done it all, sounds like.
I've definitely done a lot. It's I don't know. I feel like Madonna. I have to like keep reinventing myself.
So what's next then?
Yeah, well, I guess I have been moving towards long-term a little bit just to test the water, see what it's like to have a property manager that's not me. I think my strategy is like, how can it get easier and more hands-off over time? I'm still in love with short-term rentals. So, you know, we were talking earlier, I'm on a wait list at one of your places and hoping to get one there. But yeah, it's hard to know what's next. I've bought 6 units already in 2021. And so I'm like, maybe I should stop. I don't know how many units I need. I don't think I'm going to be up at a 41 or so like Avery.
Well, 12 of those were in one shot. So
yeah, got you there fast.
Yeah. Yeah. So last 3 questions, we're coming towards the end of the show. What advice would you give 20-year-old Ziana if she was sitting here today? What would you tell her?
Yeah, I think like I'd always loved houses. Like I'm one of those people that anytime I go to someone's house, I want a tour. You know, I want to see how people live. I want to see how they decorate. I just love homes. So I think I would have told that version of me to get into real estate. I probably would have become a real estate agent earlier because that would have been a great way to learn this business, maybe in a safe way. And the way that I did it was a little more adventurous, but I didn't start till I was like 26. So, I mean, 6 more years, I could have had, who knows? I could have had an Avery empire by now.
So kind of piggybacking off of that question, what advice would you give a new investor who's looking to get started the way the market is today?
Yeah, well, I would say that the most important thing is like, who is your advisor? Who are you listening to? If you're working with an agent, I would say you have to be really careful and not just work with a brand new agent or agents that sell people like dream homes and then they never invest themselves or anything. You kind of need an agent who's doing numbers in their head, that they own properties themselves, that they can tell you 2 or 3 strategies on how to rent your property if you're trying to be an investor yourself. So I would say it's really about where you're getting your advice and who are your mentors, who are your advisors on your team.
That's really great advice. And last question, what is your favorite book that has impacted your mindset?
Yeah, so I really love Chris Voss. He has Never Split the Difference. I imagine lots of people say it.
The first one, actually.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah.
Thank you very much. I want to like re-listen to it because I remember when I was listening to that book, I was like, oh, there are so many nuggets here. And I just want to like re-listen to it every year or something like that. Because I think negotiation is in everything we do in life. And the better you are at that, like the more you're going to succeed.
I 1000% agree with that. Yep. Yeah. Great book recommendation. Well, Ziana, thank you so much for coming on. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Instagram is my most responsive place. Ziana McIntyre Real Estate is my Instagram handle. I also have a website, Ziana McIntyre. At the current time, I'm doing free 15-minute strategy sessions. So if people want to sign up for those, yeah, just excited to work with investors. I definitely help people figure out where to invest all over in the U.S. So excited to talk to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for coming on, and we will catch you later.
Great. Have a good day.